Manx Radio's update with Beth Espy.
Well, Vastamai, good evening. Welcome to Update, your rundown of the day's news in under half an hour. Coming up before 5:30, if a bus strike goes ahead this weekend, just how many services will actually be affected and what is that going to mean for passengers? We'll hear more on that. Also, we've got more reaction on the budget, which has been approved in Tynwald. We heard the initial reaction from the Manx Care CEO, Teresa Cope, yesterday, but again, we'll talk up tonight about what it will actually mean for patients, that £404 million budget. Will services improve? Also, where do plans stand now for a Newcastle Russian High School building? And later, some great news about a brand new disability football team which is being set up in Peel. All that plus the weather and the traffic and the travel as well. But just after 5 p.m. we'll have the roundup of the main news headlines with Darren Festermeyer.
Increasing the population to 100,000 has never been a formal government ambition, according to the Chief Minister.
That figure is attached to the 5,000 new jobs figure. Okay, that is the clarity. And indeed, the first time the figure was certainly in the strategic plan in 2016.
Alfred Cannon was responding to a question in Tynwald about the potential impact such growth could have on public services. Meanwhile, the Treasury Minister has ruled out extending the same tax treatment given to married couples and civil partners to those who are cohabiting. Chris Thomas says there's no plans to make the issue a priority, but he will reflect on it with his department. And PLAFC has confirmed it's launching a new pan-disability football team on the island. Working in partnership with QET High School, the team is becoming the second of its kind available on Manx shores. To international news, an appeal for witnesses over claims of human trafficking and sexual assaults are among police inquiries linked to the Epstein files. Surrey police say they're looking for documents alleging an incident in the 1990s, while two other forces are assessing data about private jet flights. Team GB's men's curlers have kept alive their slim medal hopes at the Winter Olympics. They comfortably beat the USA, but still need other results to go their way if they're to make the semi-finals. And a 90s retro lager brand is returning to supermarket shelves next month. Carling Black Label was phased out in 1997. It's described as full-flavoured and is stronger than Carling Original. Those are the headlines. News next at 6.
Thank you very much indeed, Darren. Now the weather brought to you by Manx Glass and Glazing. So generally cloudy this evening, still quite windy, a few patchy outbreaks of rain that will fall as snow on the hills. It's still going to feel really cold. There is that strong east or southeast wind. Maximum temperature is only around 5. Tonight the winds will ease, but there'll still be a few outbreaks of rain and hill snow. Then tomorrow, light winds. It will be dry for a time before, you guessed it, a little rain arrives in the evening. And again on Friday, there'll be rain in the morning that will clear to sunny intervals and scattered showers by the afternoon. Fresh to strong southwest winds, and it will actually on Friday feel a little bit milder. A couple of yellow weather warnings. Warnings still in force. The one for coastal overtopping is until 2:30 tomorrow morning. It's the usual places, Douglas, Laxey and Ramsey promenades, particularly susceptible. The high water will be around 20 past midnight. And then for snow and ice, that has been extended until 11 a.m. tomorrow morning. That is generally for roads above 700 feet.
Manx Glass and Glazing are able to offer an emergency out-of-hours boarding up service. Call 491918.
You're listening to Update here on Manx Radio. So we'll talk about the bus strike that is planned for this weekend, first of all, because work is underway to determine how many services will be able to operate if a strike does go ahead this weekend. Unite the Union's members within Bus Fannin are due to walk out from Saturday if a new pay deal isn't agreed beforehand. That industrial action is expected to last around 10 days. Well, the Infrastructure Minister, Tim Crookle, has provided an update in Tynwald today.
The department remains committed to securing a reliable, efficient and cost-effective service for passengers and has tabled two offers, both of which have been rejected by the union. The department remains open to negotiations around these two offers and a further meeting was had today with MERS and the union. The department appreciates the significant difficulties that strike action by the Unite union will bring to the public and it remains committed to working with its staff to find a solution. However, should the Unite industrial action continue, plans have been developed to support passengers and the community as best as we can, possibly can, from Saturday. Thank you, Mr. President.
Could the Minister just confirm how many of his bus drivers are Unite members? So how many will be going on strike, and what percentage that is of the bus drivers overall? And he also mentioned that plans and contingencies were in place should the strike go ahead from Saturday. Can we have some more detail that will reassure the public who are noting that Saturday's not too far away?
I totally agree with the Honourable Member that Saturday's not too far away, but we are still hopeful, always hopeful, that tomorrow might bring us something to that meeting if it takes place. I don't know how many members of Unite are. I will find out overnight and update members tomorrow. And regarding plans for Saturday, if Saturday is the chosen day to go on strike, the officers are working out at the moment just how many are available and what services will be able to be covered. And if the meeting tomorrow is unsuccessful or it doesn't happen and the strike happens on Saturday, then we will put out to the public domain exactly what routes will be available and when.
The Minister said that obviously over the weekend it would be shoppers, etc., but schools would take priority on Monday. How can the Minister guarantee there will be enough bus drivers to deliver the school service? If not, what's the contingency?
The officers are working on that, and it depends on the staffing numbers that they have available to them, Mr. President.
So that was Infrastructure Minister Tim Crookall answering some questions in Tynwald. We understand a further meeting has been taking place this afternoon, so as soon as we have any update on that, we will let you know. 6 minutes past five. We're going to talk more about the budget, which was approved in Tynwald yesterday. Just a reminder, we've got that special programme on Friday. It is from 5 until 6.30. It's with an invited audience down at Lukey's at the Best Western Palace Hotel. And the Treasury Minister, Chris Thomas, will be answering questions. If you can't be there, you can always send questions in to the usual studio@manxradio.com email address, and we will put as many as we possibly can to him. It will be videoed as well. You'll be able to watch it afterwards, but you'll also be able to listen live from five. Well, one of the main headlines from the unveiling of this year's budget was the amount that has been allocated for healthcare. We talked a bit about this yesterday. So their total budget for the financial year will be £404.2 million. That's up from £361.8 million last year. The Treasury Minister, Mr. Thomas, said the funding increase means that for the first time since its inception, the health body is actually going to be funded in line with the recommendations from the 2019 Sir Jonathan Michael report. Well, the Manx Care Chief Executive Theresa Cope has been telling Lewis that it is a welcome uplift, but also what does it actually mean for patients?
So we have a long-term commitment to really build our out-of-hospital capacity and to support people to remain independent in their own homes, access good level of out-of-hospital services and so to support people in their own communities. That has been a long-term commitment, and this budget allows us to continue that level of progress. So additional capacity with primary care appointments in terms of dentistry and GP provision and those practitioners that support delivery in primary care. Support for our carers, that's incredibly important. The ability to maintain our air bridge and our connectivity with England. So the helicopter emergency service is now funded within our baseline. It wasn't funded in our baseline in last year. So for that to be recognised and in our position from the outset of the financial year is incredibly important. We're also able to see an increase in nursing and residential care beds for those patients whose care is funded by Social Security. That will enable us to be able to look at discharging patients from hospital to the appropriate environments sooner. We are also able to move forward with our ambition to deliver NICE approved technology and drugs. And that's something we have been doing year on year. We haven't always been able to fully commit to the full rollout of that. And this year is no different, but it allows us to continue making real progress in treating patients with NICE approved drugs and treatments. It allows us to continue to make investments around safeguarding and in social work capacity, really, really important areas. So we can't do everything. And we submitted lots more business cases, but it allows us to make some real targeted investment.
That is the Manx Care Chief Executive Theresa Cope there. If you want to hear that interview in full, it is available as a newscast on the front page of the Manx Radio website. Well, almost £6 million more in this budget will be invested in keeping the Isle of Man safe and secure over the next year. But the Justice and Home Affairs Minister has told Tynwald, while it puts her department on a more sustainable financial footing, it won't go far enough. Prisoners and prison staff are said to be under huge strain due to the Jerby facility still being full. Here's Jane Paul Wilson.
We've been operating at over 100% of its original capacity for more than 12 months, driven by increased numbers of drug and sexual offending. This has caused huge strain on prison facilities, staff and prisoners, leading to increased operating costs across all areas of the prison budget. This includes the costs for temporary on-site accommodation. The probation service is equally stretched. Probation officers continue to keep our community safe, managing a range of individuals in the community, including those who are complex and high risk. Our probation officers continue to manage high caseloads, and the Community Rehabilitation Centre, which offers bail and prison leaver accommodation, continues to operate at maximum capacity. The department has identified a range of modern community disposals that will contribute towards reducing the prison population and improving rehabilitation. But there is currently no budget for these new approaches, which require resource and technology to implement.
That is a Justice and Home Affairs Minister, Jane Paul Wilson, speaking in Tynwald yesterday. Just a note, we've got Russ Foster, the Chief Constable, on Man in Line with Andy. That's next Wednesday from midday. So if you've got any questions to direct to him, then you'll be able to call in then. Thinking about something else that's been talked about an awful lot over the past couple of years is the Castle Rushen High School and its replacement. And a Southern MHK says she's now less confident than she was at the start of the year that there is enough support for that. There are hopes that work could start on the site in the summer, though the project wasn't actually mentioned as part of this year's budget. Chief Minister Alfred Cannon assured the people that the omission of the school from the year's Pink Book doesn't mean the work has been delayed, just that the final tender price is not yet known. But the Rushen MHK and former Infrastructure Minister Dr. Michelle Haywood hopes that is the case.
The Castle Rushen High School project is currently out to procurement anyway for a price to be set for it. So it was always destined to come through the quarterly capital funding that sits outside of the budget that we have in February. There were other opportunities during the year, and this was something introduced in this administration. So that sits there, so does Portsmouth High Street. There are a number of, so do the horse trams if that business case comes forward, so does Tramway Terrace. Those things sit in the quarterly capital applications. I don't know what the current mood for this Treasury Minister is about whether he is going to carry that on or not. To my mind, it's a really sensible way of doing things because it allows you to get an up-to-date price for a project to come back to Tynwald for approval and to get that project moved through, rather than trying to store everything up and land it into a budget in February when I don't think those things get enough scrutiny. And also you'll be trying to land so many up-to-date prices to come in on February that that's almost a nightmare for the project teams. So I think this is the quarterly capital approvals was one of those moves in response to, and I hate the term lessons learned, but learning from other large capital projects about when and how you manage to work out what the cost is of those projects and when you get Tynwald approval and how close that Tynwald approval is and how locked in you are to that price at the start. So I think that's the right way of managing it. The PDF funding, so the project development funding that underpins those bigger capital applications, is shown in the budget. And so that indicates that those projects are still alive, but it's just a bit of a shift to not landing all the capital spend at the same time.
That's the Rushen MHK former Infrastructure Minister Dr. Michelle Haywood talking about the Castle Rushen High School. It's coming up to 5:15. If you're not going to head out tonight because it's a little bit too cold, then turn the telly on at 7pm because the Isle of Man's resident Silvery Gibbons are going to be on TV this evening. The Currits Wildlife Park is featuring on The One Show on BBC One, and this follows a visit from Springwatch presenter Hannah Stitfall, who came over to find out how the park is aiding conservation efforts for the endangered species. So that is starting at 7pm.
Manx Radio Travel, serviced by Quayside Tyres.
So nothing specific on the roads, hopefully on your way home tonight. Cueg until the 17th of April. There are temporary lights at the bottom of Cueg Hill. That's just near the railway bridge. That's for sewer works there. In Union Mills until the 3rd of March, temporary lights on the Strang Road. That's 24 hours a day for drainage work. Near Kirkmichael, the Ballalai Road is still closed for resurfacing. And in Ramsey, Albert Road and Waterloo Road are closed for excavation work. Nothing too bad down at the airport. I think there's a little bit of a delay on the EasyJet London Gatwick, but it's only a few minutes, so nothing hopefully to worry about there. The Manxmen got into Douglas at around about 5:15, heading out for Heysham again at 7:15.
Manx Radio Travel, serviced by Quayside Tyres. Call Quayside Tyres on 664417 to book your free vehicle's winter check, so your vehicle is safe for you and other road users.
It's exactly 5:15 here on Update, and we'll continue just looking at some of the reaction to the budget now, because the Manx Labour Party says politicians need to be honest about sustainability and fairness when making permanent financial commitments. So the party actually voted against this year's budget, but it did support the proposal to increase the personal allowance threshold, which is going to cost more than £25 million every year. Despite lending support for that move, the leader of the party, Joni Farragher, described it as a raid on reserves, saying it should have been a tapered uplift.
Those politicians that have stood up in former years and said, we are raiding reserves, we cannot keep doing this, it's not sustainable, we don't have money to get into place housing, action on housing, we don't have money to get into place, you know, special educational needs support in schools, we don't have money to support the suicide prevention strategy and put meaningful resources in place to tackle mental health. We don't have money for any of this, for people who are vulnerable, but we do suddenly have this huge amount of cash that's a blanket uplift for people who are high wage earners. And that was really the point that I was trying to make yesterday, was why is it always a no when we talk about people who are more vulnerable, but it's a yes when it comes to something like this. And it is interesting to see the flip from members who stood up and said we're in really challenging financial times, to suddenly hearing them say, look, actually the reserves are doing fine, we can afford this. I would like an objective review really of that. And I think some of the Treasury Minister's comments yesterday around the fact that Moody's have given us a good assessment, absolutely true, but not based on this budget. And what would they say based on this budget? And that will be an interesting upcoming thing in the future to find out.
That's the Manx Labour Party leader, Joni Farragher, there. Well, two groups representing businesses on the Isle of Man have welcomed the decision to increase personal allowance in the budget, but they have voiced concerns over the size and cost of government. The Isle of Man Chamber of Commerce and the Local Economy Forum have both shared their thoughts on government's financial plan for the year ahead, as Sian Cowper reports.
The Chamber, which represents businesses in a wide range of sectors on the island, described Chris Thomas's budget as a step in the right direction. The body welcomed the £2,250 increase to the personal tax allowance and said the freezing of the higher rate of income tax at 21% provides stability at a time of economic uncertainty. However, it says reforms are still needed to improve efficiency. The Chamber warns that most people are no better off than they were when the tax rate stood at 20% 2 years ago, and that this budget does not address the underlying cost and size of the system. It believes meaningful change will only come from reducing the cost base of government, enabling the island to remain competitive in the decades ahead. The Local Economy Forum, a lobby group set up following concerns over now scrapped plans for a 9.9% hike to minimum wage, welcomed this week's announcement. It says Mr. Thomas has taken swift and decisive action over the personal allowance. The forum echoes the Chamber's concerns over the cost of government, though, saying its wage bill has increased alarmingly in this administration, while the economy has little more than flatlined. Minister Thomas described this year's budget as one of stability, security and confidence, hoping his plans sets out a pathway towards reducing the island's reliance on the general reserves.
Sian Cowper reporting. You can find out more details as ever on the Manx Radio website. Just to let you know, the under-15s hockey game at QE2 tonight that was between Harlequins under-15s and Valkyries under-15s has been postponed. That is because of the weather. The goals are moving about, apparently, so it's not safe to play. So that game has been postponed. Now, of course, when we have the budget in Tynwald during the month of February, they take that first and then questions come later. And the Chief Minister was answering a question today about the potential impact the growth of the population could have on public services. He said increasing the population to 100,000 had actually never been a formal government ambition, despite it being written as a target in the 2024 Ireland Plan. And he says he does need to provide clarity around the number.
I do recognise there has been much discussion over the last 3 years around the figure referenced by the Honourable Member's question. And in many quarters, it is misunderstood and still gets quoted as a government ambition. It is not, and it never has been, but indeed it was the commitment to create and fill 5,000 new jobs by 2032 that has been the core ambition of the Isle of Man's long-term economic strategy since its approval by Tynwald in 2022. That number reflects the island's need to secure long-term economic resilience, broaden the tax base and ensure sustainable public services in the face mainly of demographic challenges. For the current administration, that long-term ambition was refined in the Island Plan with the aim of 1,800 new jobs by 2026. Encouragingly, since 2021, employment has increased by around 1,500 people, with nearly 3,000 jobs created or filled across the economy.
It's interesting to hear the Chief Minister talk about the fact the Island Plan didn't have a target of 100,000 in it. I'm just going to read from the foreword of the 2024 Island Plan document, literally right beneath the picture of the Chief Minister, where he says, in 2022, the Island Plan, this administration set out a bold vision for the next 10 to 15 years. 5,000 new jobs, a £10 billion economy, and a target population of 100,000.
So I need to be absolutely clear, that figure is attached to the 5,000 new jobs figure. Okay, that is the clarity. And indeed, the first time the figure was actually referenced, or higher numbers have been referenced, was certainly in the strategic plan in 2016, which referenced a projected population of over 93,500. And the Cabinet Office also produced a document entitled Meeting Our Population Challenges in 2018, which projected a population of over 101,000 in 2036, with the assumption of 1,000 net migrants annually.
That's the Chief Minister, Alfred Cannon. OK, it is 21 minutes past five. Let's talk about something completely different, because February is a month where we're encouraged to think about heart health, our own and others. So it's appropriate that a small community has taken out time to learn how to use a device which has become a familiar sight, because there are defibrillators in many places around the Isle of Man. But how many of us would actually know how to use them? John Moss has been to see one group of people to find out.
In an emergency, would you know how to defibrillate, to use a defibrillator? There are many defibrillators around the island. Last figure I've seen is 600. There may well be more now. That includes quite a number inside private buildings. One small community in the south have held a gathering to demonstrate its use and to let all present, and there was a good turnout in St Mark's, all present know what to do if it became necessary. That includes applying CPR, that's cardiopulmonary resuscitation, before attaching the pads. Jane was the organiser.
But it was a nice, relaxed environment, and the trainer was so warm and welcoming, wasn't she?
Roland, how old are you?
12.
How on earth do you know as much as you do about this? Because you were actually contributing all the way through it. Where did you learn that?
In year six, St John's Ambulance came in and talked for a bit. And I just remembered it from there.
Well, you must have been interested, because obviously it went in your head and percolated. How much of your mates actually have taken in the stuff as well? Do they know this stuff as well?
Yeah, quite a lot of. They take it in. They're pretty intelligent.
Would you feel confident enough to do this yourself? Or would you leave it to an adult?
I'd probably leave it to an adult so I don't mess up.
You were very impressive. Well done.
Thank you.
This is a good idea for all communities to do this, wouldn't it?
Very much so, yes, very much so.
Are we unusual in having a gathering like this?
I don't think we're unusual, but it's very positive, the turnout. And yes, I think just getting the word out there, saving lives, and it's the Heart Foundation Month is February, so, you know, let's hope that message gets out. Look after your heart.
What a great thing that John was finding out about there. Speaking of great things, Peel AFC has set up a new pan disability football team, only the second of its kind here on the Isle of Man. Running sessions is coach Dave Chapman alongside the Isle of Man's disability football ambassador, Pete Corkle. Mr Corkle thinks this is another big step forward for disability football over here, and that there are hopes to set up more teams like it in the north and the south.
I think to have one club involved was absolutely brilliant, and it very much got things off the ground. But I think that having that second club see the benefit of putting these sessions on and see the value in bringing these young people within that local club, within that local community, is really starting to get that ball rolling. And I envisage the meeting on Monday with our club in the south to go very well. And once we've got those three clubs involved, I don't think it's going to be long before we get a fourth involved. And then the opportunities are really, really exciting to be able to put on fixtures and potentially tournaments or a little league between those clubs in the future as well.
How encouraging is it that the clubs themselves are getting behind these initiatives?
Well, it wouldn't happen without them. It wouldn't happen without the enthusiasm from the likes of Brian Callow and the likes of Cliffy Dunn from those local football clubs in believing in the project and seeing the benefit that it would bring, not just to the kids, but also to their local football clubs as well, to have young people with different needs being part of their football club and the value that they can bring to it as well.
And crucially, of course, the players that are actually involved, whether they want to be as competitive as they can or just enjoy the social environment, just what does it mean to them?
I think it matters a great deal. I've always said so much about the football isn't even about the football, is it? When you're part of a local football club, it's not just about the training that you go to, but it's about the relationships you make, the friendships that are formed. I think it's about the social activities that can then take place outside of that. And, you know, people with disabilities often face different barriers to you or I in terms of forming and maintaining friendships. Often those friendships can be limited to when they're at school. So to have a social activity outside of school that they can be part of, where friendships can grow and develop, is not only great for them socially and developmentally, but also from a safeguarding perspective as well, because that they've got other people that are looking out for them. And often, as we all know, in sport, we can make friendships that last for life. And that's exactly the same for people with disabilities.
Isn't that great? The Isle of Man's Disability Football Ambassador, Pete Corkill there. Well, Sport on Update is brought to you by The Print Shed. And here's Rob.
First off, in motorsport, organisers of the Isle of Man TT races have confirmed multiple major names are once again entered to take on the event in 2026. Taking place from Monday the 25th of May to Saturday the 6th of June, the meeting is expected to feature all of the race winners and podium finishers from last year. Among those confirming their attendance in the solo classes are 33-time winner Michael Dunlop, defending senior TT champion Davey Todd, an outright lap record holder, and 14-time race winner Peter Hickman. Snaefell Mountain Course legend John McGuinness is also said to be involved in what will be his 30th year at the races. Meanwhile, in the sidecar class, defending champions and outright sidecar lap record holders, Manx brothers Ryan and Callum Crowe will be on the roster, as well as 14-time winning driver Ben Birchall. Also included in the three-wheel class will be two former world champions in the form of Todd Ellis and the returning Tim Reeves, whilst there's also said to be a comeback for two-time TT winner John Holden. Elsewhere, former Isle of Man rugby player Bevan Rodd is in contention to make his third consecutive appearance at this year's Six Nations. The 2023 Isle of Man Sportsman of the Year has been included in Steve Borthwick's 23-man squad to face Ireland this Saturday. So far during the tournament, Rodd has featured in both the 48-7 win over Wales in the first round on the 7th of February and the 31-20 defeat to Scotland in the Calcutta Cup last weekend. In athletics, former Ireland runner Sarah Webster has been named the 2025 International Association of Ultra Runners Women's Athlete of the Year. Webster, who's previously represented the Ireland at the Commonwealth Games, takes the accolade following a record-breaking campaign. She took top spot for the female award with 42.42% of the votes. During 2025, Webster set a new world record of 278.622 kilometres on her way to winning the IAU 24-hour World Championship in France in October. And finally, in hockey, Bakaze maintained their lead in the Men's Premier League with a commanding 10-0 win in their rearranged game with Vikings B last night. There's more men's top flight action this evening as Vikings A take on Harlequins A. That'll get underway at the NSC in Douglas at 8:30pm.
Thank you very much indeed, Rob. Just a reminder that under-15s hockey game at QE2 between Harlequins and Valkyries has been postponed tonight because of the weather. Thank you very much indeed for your company. That's all from us. Spotlight, brought to you by the Isle of Man Arts Council and presented by Howard Kane, is next. Update will be back at 5 tomorrow. Have a lovely evening.